Today she is Masechta Gittin Daf Mem Zayin. We will begin on Daf Mem Vav Amud Beis at the second Mishnah, the lower Mishnah on Daf Mem Vav Amud Beis. Says the Mishnah, Moicheres Atzmai, Res Bonav Loiv the Kachavim. Somebody sells himself and his children to Goyim. The Halach is Ein Poydin Naisai. We don't pay to ransom them. Av Poydin Masabonim Lach Mitzavim. After the father passes away, we do ransom the sons. As we're going to learn the Gemara, the situation here is a person that does this habitually, selling himself and hoping to get ransomed. The Farshim debate, what is the halacha? The Mishnah says, ain't paidin nicer, we don't have to ransom them. What is the halacha if somebody's prepared to spend the money anyway, even though the Mishnah says we don't have to? May someone ransom them or not? Machloikas, I saw the Meiri says, if somebody wants to do it, we won't stop him. He doesn't have to do it. Others say, no, the Mishnah means we should not ransom such an individual. Everybody agrees, that, as we learned earlier in our parak, that certainly spending more than what kedei demein is, whatever the price should be, everybody agrees is certainly unacceptable. Why is there a difference as far as the children are concerned while the father is alive or the father is not alive? Because as long as the father is alive, the father will protect them. Once the father passes away, we don't have the father's protection there. So I saw the Chassam Sofer, the Ksav Sofer asked, what kind of protection? What kind of father is this? We have a father who is putting himself into captivity together with his children. That's the father we're relying on. So the Ksav Sofer says a beautiful teretz. The Ksav Sofer says the protection we're worried about here is not necessarily physical protection. It's spiritual protection that while they're assimilated by the Goyim, who knows what will happen. So he says, an unbelievable vortex of Sofer. He says, even if you have a father who's putting his children into such a situation of captivity, of assimilation, he's still going to watch his children that they should behave properly. Even if he's not doing the right thing, we could still rely on a father to make sure that his children are properly guarded. The Mefarshim also ask that we know that the Torah says that if a Jew is in captivity, we have the obligation to free him, to do everything to help him get out. So how could our Mishnah legislate that we don't have to? So I saw a number of terutzim. The simplest terutz is that the Rabbanon have a right to legislate the Sheva Taisa. It doesn't involve us doing anything wrong. It just involves Sheva Taisa not doing something. We have a right to do that. That's one pshat. Another pshat that I saw is, why is there such an important rule that we ransom somebody in captivity? Because as we said a moment ago, we don't want him to become assimilated. But this person, as we explained, and we'll learn in the Gemara in a moment again, is a person that's constantly putting himself in that position. So there's no point in ransoming him. He's just going to go right back. But the Miches Chinuch says a very interesting answer. Miches Chinuch says there is a difference between relatives and people who aren't relatives. He says our Mishnah is speaking to non-relatives. Non-relatives don't have such a specific obligation and responsibility to ransom their relatives. The non-relatives, and therefore the Mishnah says you don't have to do it under these circumstances. A relative suggests the Mechasrach this Mishnah may not be speaking to, and a relative has the obligation to ransom his relatives under all circumstances. Says the Gemara, Amar of Asi, as we explained, when does this then apply? Vushemach of Hashanah v'Shilish. This happened a number of times. And as Mefarshim say, that's the word Hamoicher. Hamoicher means he's constantly doing this. Says the Gemara, Hana b'nei michsi, the yasi zuzi ma'ev de kachavim. There were these people that were always borrowing money from ma'ev de kachavim, and there was a group that if you didn't pay him back, they took care of you. V'la havelu mefrinu, and they didn't have the ability to pay back. V'asu kagarvelei, so they went and they kidnapped them. Asu l'kamed rafuna, and now they came to rafuna to help them get out. Amlu my evelchu, what could I do for you? The Tanan, we just learned in the Mishnah, Hamoichus Atzmai Vespon of Lev de Kachavim, somebody who sells himself and his children into captivity, ain't Paidin Arsai. Omalei Rav Abba, so Rav Abba says, Belimitanin Rabbeinu, didn't you just teach us that this only applies Vushamach of Hashanah Vashilish, if it happens regularly? Omalei, so he says, exactly, that's the case here. Hani Mirga Rigili, these people always are doing this, and therefore, and they always expect us to ransom them, and we don't have that obligation. Says the Gemara, who gave the zav nafshi l'ludoi? There was a person who sold himself to cannibals. That's how most pshat mefarshim explain. Others say l'ludoi means it was a sect of oivdei avoid zara. That part of their worship was that they sacrificed humans. Also kamei the Rav Ami. So he came to Rav Ami. Amalei, Perkin, save me, ransom me. Amalei Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah. Hamoichers atzma spun of loiv de kachavim, that somebody puts himself into such a situation, a pardon my son, we're not going to obligate it to ransom them. Avol pardon us abonim, we do have the obligation to save the children. Lachem misas aviyim, just like because we see mishum kalkula, because we're worried about the children being left here. V'hochad ikke ketara. Here certainly where our lives are in danger. You certainly have the obligation to free us. There's machlaikas in the Mefarshim. If this was a person who had been doing this habitually, having himself captured by the cannibals and hoping to get freed, or if a person gets captured by the cannibals and he knows what they are going to do, even one time is already, why'd you put yourself into that situation? So Rabbanan told Rav Ami, "Hi Yisrael Mumer. This person is a Yisrael Mumer, and therefore we don't have the obligation to free him. How do we know that he's a Yisrael Mumer? The Kachazilei, we saw the Ka'achal Nevelus Atreifus, that he's eating non-kosher food. And as Mefarshim explained, it had to be that at least two people saw him eating non-kosher food, because we can never establish anything less than two people saying it. Amalei." So he said, just because we saw him eating non-kosher food, perhaps, it wasn't because he doesn't want to follow the halacha. He got hungry, and there was non-kosher food available, and he ate it. So he says, I saw that there was non-kosher food, and kosher food, just as available one as the other, and this person, he purposely picked the non-kosher food. Such a person is a mumer lahachas. And as the Taz says, as we see from this Gemara, that to be identified as a mumer lahachas, you don't have to be a person that does this regularly, because we only see that this story happened once. But if we saw it one time, the person had the opportunity to eat kosher food, all things being equal, as the Aruch HaShulchan explains, and he chose to eat non-kosher, he's a mumer lahachas. Amalei, zil. He's a mumer lahachas, so he told him, the Chazal are not allowing me to spend money to free you. So our Gemara clearly teaches us that a mumer lahachas, we don't have the obligation to ransom, even if he's in a very serious situation. What about a mumer l'teyavim? So it's a machlekes apoiskim. The Ramah says that we're not obligated to free a mumer l'teyavim, but we're not obligated not to free him. We can do what we want. Other Paiskim, the Gra, the Chavasyor, all seem to suggest that a Jew who's only a Mumel Tayovin, not a Mumel Lahachas, and he's in a serious situation, we have to ransom him. But it's interesting that I saw a tshuva from an Avos in the Shevet Alevi. He says that all of these rules that we're discussing, the factors to take into consideration nowadays are very different factors. He says, first of all, he says, jail, prison nowadays, is not the same as prison in those days. In those days, somebody being in prison was a question of sakonis nefoshes. Today, not that a prison is such a great place to be, but it's not a shiloh of sakonis nefoshes usually. That's one point he makes. He says you have to look at the situation, you have to look at the country, you have to look at the situation. The other thing he says that you have to take in consideration is that, is this person who was put into jail a menace to society? He says, if the person doesn't act properly, and if we're going to get him out of jail, he's just going to go right back and do terrible things, then we don't have an obligation to help him get out of jail. All of these factors have to be taken into consideration. Fascinating story begins the Gemara. Rish Lakish Zav Nafshi L'Ludoi. Rish Lakish sold himself to cannibals. Machlokes, we know, and this is going to be relevant to our piece of Gemara we're learning now, the Rish Lakish had an interesting history. Rish Lakish was about tshuva. He was originally a gazlan. He was originally a thief. Then he did tshuva. So the machlaikis amongst the mafarshim, this episode that our Gemara is now going to be reporting, at what point in Rish Lakish's history did this happen? Was it before he did tshuva or afterwards? So he sold himself to these cannibals. Shaka Bahadai, he took along with himself Chayosa V'Gegelta. He took along with himself a bag, and in the bag there was a very hard ball. Ball made out of lead. Amma. And he said, Gemira the Yom of the Basra, we know that the last day of this, of their victim's life, before they're about to devour the person, called the boy Menei Avdilei. Whatever the victim wants, they do. Kehechel the Leichel Admei. Two pshatim hechel the Leichel Admei. One pshat is, from an interesting pshat, even though they're terrible people, the cannibals, they feel bad, so they want the victim to forgive them. So how do they get the victim to forgive them? They grant him his last wish. Another pshat is, again, we don't understand this, that the blood of a person who died happy is sweeter than the blood of somebody who died in a bad mood. So they grant him his last wish in order that his blood should be sweeter. So Yoima Basra, on his last day, about before they're about to finish him off, what would you like? So he told them, I want each one of you to sit down and let me tie them up. And then every one of you, as you're sitting and tied up, I want to give you one slap and a half a slap. So each one of them agreed, sat himself down, and got tied up. As soon as he gave them with this ball, this lead ball, a zetz, a clap, they died. It was a very powerful clap. Nofet nishmase, and he died. Chakina l'shine, and as the person was dying, he was grimacing in pain from the clap. Amalei, achuke mekum chayksebe. So look, he says, you're laughing at me. Akati pashlach gaba. I still owe you a half a patch. And like this, Katlina Kula. He killed them all. Obviously, there's very deep shotim in this Gemara. The some cipher explains the Gemara homiletically, that speaking about the Yetzihara, how a person could overcome his Yetzihara. I saw a very interesting vart from the Kutz Rebbe that he said the following. He said that he once met Reb El Yechaim Meisels. Rabbi Eliyahu Chaim Meisels was the Rav of Lodz. And he asked him, how are you doing? He said, I'm not that happy. He says, until I became the Rav, Lodz was a very large city. Until I became the rabbi of this city, I had time to learn. Now I have no more time to learn. The communal responsibilities are very great. So he says, that's the story of Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish became a Rav. He became a Baal Tshuva, became a Rav. And people were eating him up. They were eating up all of his time. So Nafik v'osif, so Reish Lakish leaves this place. Yosef k'ochav v'shasli, and he's eating and drinking. Omlei b'artei, so his daughter said to him, "Leboss midel mezgalei, don't you want something to lay on, or some linen?" Omlei biti kresi, kari. My stomach is my pillow. He laid on his stomach. So Farshim explained what is happening here. Because the halacha is that one is not allowed to lay on his stomach when he sleeps. So how is he laying on his stomach? So I saw a number of pshatim. One pshat is that a person who's heavy is allowed to sleep on his stomach. Another pshat that I saw, that he was saying like this, as we said before, a shlokish was originally a thief. The thief's hide laying on the stomach. So he says, now I have to do tshuva, laying on my stomach and listening to Divrei Torah. But the Chasam Sofer explains this Gemara, again, homiletically. He explains that a shlokish was about tshuva. And many people ask, what is the proper way of doing tshuva? And they think accepting upon yourself all sorts of fasts and all sorts of other sigufim is the proper way of doing tshuva. So he said, that's not the proper way of doing tshuva. The proper way of doing tshuva is crazy. The Gemara, when it speaks about a person who knows, who learns a lot, male kresoi, he fills himself up with shas and poiskim. So what he was saying is, I need to do tshuva. And the proper way of doing tshuva is by learning. When Reish Lakish passed away, Shava kavad marika. All he left over was just some spice, some saffron. Kara nafshi, vazel cherem chelem. He was dissatisfied that he left over even this. I shouldn't have left over anything. So I saw two pshatim. Why is he dissatisfied that he left over anything? One pshat that the Gross says is as follows. The Gross says that if somebody owes money and he has very limited funds, the halach is that we have to try to work out a schedule for payment for him, but we leave him over what to live with. That's a person who's a baal choyv, a person who owes money. But if a person is a gazlan, for him we don't try to work out any arrangement. Here we're dealing with a shlokish we said was a gazlan. So everything he had to use to repay from people he stole from. And he was upset that he left over anything that he didn't use to pay up the people who he had stolen from. That's the gross pshat. But the Chafetz Chaim and Ramosh and the Dibros Moshe have a whole different pshat. They say that a person in this world is here to learn Torah and do mitzvahs. He's not supposed to spend his time trying to amass a fortune. I, says Rav Moshe, we know, we've learned so many times, Hilchos Yerusha, that the Torah does tell us who gets somebody's estate. He says the Torah is telling us that if you left over, how do we divide it? But not that you should try to leave over. So Rish Lakish was upset with himself, even for this little amount that he left over, the time that he spent on trying to amass this, he could have been learning. He could have been doing mitzvahs. And there's a fascinating story I saw that the Panovitcher Rav said over. The Panovitcher Rav said that he was learning b'chavrusa with Rav Chanan Wasserman by the Chofetz Chaim. And they were learning, and they needed to look something up in a sefer. And they assumed that the Chofetz Chaim had that sefer, because the Chofetz Chaim quotes that sefer in his form. So they came to Chofetz Chaim's house to look for the sefer. And the Chofetz Chaim sees them looking, and he asks them, what are you looking for? He says, we're looking for this sefer. He says, so they asked him, so he said, I don't have the sefer. So they said, how do you not have the sefer? You quoted in your sefer. He says, when I needed that sefer, there was a very wealthy Jew who lived in Warsaw, had a very large library. I used to borrow the sefer from him. And then the Chofetz Chaim made the following statement. He says, the Chofetz Chaim didn't have a large library. He says, even the few svarim that I already have are too many. He says, because svarim cost money, especially in those days, svarim were very expensive. Svarim cost money, and the time that I spend on earning money to buy svarim is time that I could have spent on learning and doing mitzvahs. And every moment is too precious to waste to do anything else. Says the Mishnah, Hamaycha Sadeh Lev Kachavim, if somebody sells his field in Eretz Yisrael, which we've been discussing, one's not allowed to do that. Loi sechonim, loi keach, umevi meni bikurim, when they take an oilim. Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos, how to understand this Gemara, this Mishnah. According to Rashi, what the Mishnah is teaching us is that the person who sold his field, who should have not have sold his field, to the goy, retains the responsibility of bringing bikurim from that field. That means he has to purchase the first fruits from the goy, and bring it up as bikurim. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos, in this few versions, how to understand what Tosfos says that whoever buys the fruit of the field has to bring bikurim. He can't say, I bought from the goy, it's not my problem. Or another pshat, if somebody's going to purchase this field from a goy, the obligation of bikurim still remains there. So Mefarshim discuss why is the Mishnah more concerned about Bikurim than Trumas and Maestris? Why does the Mishnah say that we have to take off Trumas and Maestris also? So I saw a number of explanations. One explanation is, Trumas and Maestris, as we've learned many times, there are halachic ways of getting exempt from taking Trumas and Maestris. There is no way of avoiding bringing Bikurim, halachically. Another pshat is Bikurim, as we know the Mishnah says in Masechta Bikurim, was typically brought with a lot of fanfare. So here, if this field's Bikurim is not being brought, it's noticeable that the Bikurim is missing. Trumas and Maestris were given privately to the Kohen, to the Levi, to the Ani. And therefore, it's not that noticeable, and that's why the Chazal did not make Gzeira that Trumas and Maestris have to be given. Says the Gemara, Amar Rava, Abishen Kinyan Levi Kacham Beretz Yisrael, even though a guy doesn't have the ability to buy property in Eretz Yisrael lafkim de meiser, that even if a guy buys property, he still has the application to take off meisers. Shenemar, the pasuk says, kili ha'aretz, li kedushas aretz, the kedushas aretz always remains. If a guy does buy a field, he has the right to do whatever he wants on the field, to dig, and whatever else he wants to do. Shenemar, Hashemayim Shemayim LaHashem, V'aretz Nosen L'nei Adam. Rav Elazar holds just the opposite. If a guy buys a property, so now it's a non-Jew's property, he doesn't have the obligation to take off Meiser. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, the goncho v'loy dogonav kachavim, only a Jew's produce has this obligation, not the produce of a kachavim. En kinyan loy kachavim b'etz Yisrael, a guy doesn't have the right lach b'baparis sichrim aris to dig in field that he bought in etz Yisrael. Shenemar l'shem ha'aretz. It's a Kodesh Baruch Hu's field. And the Mefarshim say, that means, according to Belozer, if one sells a field to a guy, he has to put in a stipulation. You're not allowed to work on the field, not allowed to make changes to the field. And if he does, one of the Zayim Mitzvahs B'nei Noyach is Geneva, it's considered that he stole. In fact, I saw that the Yavit says, that the, it says in the Megillah, that Shtiyah Kadosh, that the Megillah, the Rashi says there, that Achashverosh gave everyone to drink wine from his country. Achashverosh learned this Gemara, says the Yavit. Achashverosh learned that the halach is that if a guy makes wine in Eretz Yisrael, he's still obligated to take off trumas and maestras. He brought wine from Eretz Yisrael, goyish wine, and that trumas and maestras had not been removed, and he was hoping that Klal Yisrael will have done this terrible aveira. But if we look at this Gemara, we look at this machlokes of Rabbi and Rabbi Lazar, very difficult machlokes to understand. Rabbi holds that a guy doesn't have real ownership of the field. What's the proof? He still has to take off Meiser. If it was his field, he's a guy. Yet Rabbi says, even though he has does not have real ownership, he could still make physical changes to the field. And Rabbi Lazar is also difficult to understand. Rabbi Lazar says he obviously has full-fledged ownership in the field. What's the proof that he doesn't have to take off Meisers? But Rabbi Lazar says he can't make physical changes. So how do we understand these difficult opinions? So the Rashba, and this is important, as we'll get into the sugya on Amud Beis, explains that the machlokes of Rabbi and Rabbi Lazar is if somebody only has a kinyan peiros, that is an ownership of the field is only for its produce, not for its actual field, are you considered the owner or not? Rabbi says you are considered the owner. Rabbi Lazar says you're not considered the owner. And that's why according to Rabbi, he can make physical changes. According to Rabbi Lazar, he can't. But I saw a beautiful vort from the Satmar Rebbe, to explain Rabbi and Rabbi Lazar's opinion. Satmar Rebbe quotes a famous Gemara. The Gemara says, "Hashemayim Shemayim LaHashem, V'aretz Nosen L'nei Adam." So the question is, that's one pasuk, V'aretz Nosen L'nei Adam. Another pasuk says, "Li'aretz," the land belongs to Kadosh Baruch Hu. How do we reconcile these two pasukim? So the Gemara answers, "Kan koidem bracha, kan lacha bracha." Before a person makes a bracha, it's all Hashem's. After the person makes a bracha, it becomes ours. So he says, that's Peshat in the Gemara. According to Rabbah, the field owned by a guy, you still have to take off Maisa. Maisa is like the bracha. So if you made a bracha, the field becomes yours. And that's why you can make changes in the field. According to Rabbi Lazar, the guy doesn't take off Maisa. If he doesn't take off Maisa, it never becomes his. If it never becomes his, he can't take off. He can't make physical changes to the field. Says the Gemara, B'maika Miflgi, what is the machloikus of Rabbi Lezer and Rabbanan, Ma'asav the Goncha v'loy Dagon avikachavim. Only our produce, but not the produce of Akum, is there an obligation to take off Trumas and Meisers? Or Ma'asav the Goncha, that's Rabbi Lezer's opinion. Ma'asav the Goncha v'loy Dagon avikachavim. Only if we processed it, but if the guy completed the processing, there is no obligation. That's Rabbi's opinion. This is Machloikus Rishonim, Rashi and Tosfos. If Rabbi Lezer agrees to this limud of digun chavalei digun av kachavim. Rashi says he doesn't, Tosfos says he does. Amar Rabbah. So Rabbah says, Menoah Minala, from where do we know, says Rabbah, that if a guy buys a field, there's still an obligation to take off Trumas and Maisras in Eretz Yisrael, the Tanan. The Mishnah says, Mesech the Peah. Halecha Shechva Peah Shloiv Kachavim. We know these are the Matnas Aniyim. Chayavim B'Maisr. there's still an obligation to take off Meiser, Elm can Hefker, unless they became Hefker. Ask the Gemara, Hechidam, exactly what is the situation that that Mishnah is referring to? Elay Medi Yisrael, it was saying that it's a field that belongs to a Jew. V'laktanu of Kechavim, and the guy takes the Lek Shechapeya, Elm came Hefker, so why does the guy have to make him Hefker? If a Jew designated these items as Lek Shechapeya, they automatically become Hefker. Hefker of Kaimi. Elolav, it must be referring to a situation, Doiv Kechavim, that the field belongs to an Oiv Kechavim. V'laktanu Yisrael, and the Jew is the one that collected the produce. And Tama, the only reason that they're exempt from Trumas and Maiskas is the Hifker, because the guy was Mafgrit. Hoiloi Hifker, had the guy not been Mafgrit, Chayiv. So we see that produce of a guy is automatically, is still Chayiv in Trumas and Maiskas, unless he was Mafgrit. So ask the Rishonim, Tysus discusses this in other Rishonim, isn't the fact that the guy designated them as true, as Lekka Shecha Peya, a proof that they're Hefka? Lekka Shecha Peya, by definition, are Hefker. So Taisa says he was only Mafgrit if a Jew picks it up. If a non-Jew picks it up, it's not Hefka. It says the Gemara, Loi. It's referring to Yisrael. Ulaktina Ayv Kechavim. I, if a Jew designated them as Lekka Shecha Peya, the Ka'amrit, aren't they automatically Hefker? Ne the Mafgrit adapted Yisrael. The Jew only meant that they should be Lekka Shecha Peya if a Jew picks them up. If a guy picks them up, they lose the designation of Hefker, as Tysus calls it. Tysus calls it Hefker Betos, and therefore they don't have the designation of Lekka Shecha Peya, and they revert to the original obligation of taking off Trumas and Maisers from them. Toshma, Yisrael Shalakach Sadam Ayv Kechavim. If a Jew bought a field from a guy, actually Vishlish, if he bought it before the produce grew a third, the chazru macholai mishviyishlish, and then after it grew a third, so that the moment it grew a third, it was in Jew's property, chayevus b'maisim. Why? Shekvan eschayva. Since at the defining moment, what is the defining moment? The moment that it was became a third grown, it was under Jewish ownership, that's why it's chayev in Shumas Maisus. So the mashab, and other mepharshim say, what does the Gemara have to say, this complicated case? He bought a field from a guy, and then he had it when it was a third grown, and then he sold it back. Why don't we just say, we look at where it was at the moment of the third. Why do we have to say this complicated case? So one pshat that the Rishash answers, that the Mishnah, that the Gemara is teaching us, is that we don't have to have that it should grow from the beginning to a third under Jewish control. As long as that one moment that it grew a third, it was under Jewish control, that's enough. That's the Rishash's teretz. Another teretz, very beautiful teretz. There's a problem here. How did this Jew sell the field to a guy? We learned, you're not allowed to sell a field to a guy. So that's why the Gemara is speaking about a case that I bought the field from a guy. So since this field was originally a guy's field, there's nothing wrong if I sell it back to a guy. But what do we see? Neschayve in, only because it was under Jewish ownership at the moment it grew a third, that's why there's a chiv trumas and maestras. Loi neschayve, but had it not been under Jewish control at that moment, loi. It would not be chayv in trumas and maestras. Why? Because Jewish owned fields are not chayv in trumas and maestras. So tomorrow it's not a proof. Hakv maiskinen, this Bryce is speaking in Surya. Vikasavar, and this mandama holds, kibish yachad loi shmei kibush. We discussed this already earlier in Daf Ches. Surya was a place that David HaMelech captured, said many pshatim, either before the rest of Eretz Yisrael proper was captured, or he captured it without taking all of Klal Yisrael along with him, or he captured it without the consent of the Urim V'Tumim. So even though Trumas and Maisers are removed from the produce that grows there, it's only with the Rabbanim. And there, everybody agrees that non-Jewish produce doesn't have the chiyuv of taking off Trumas and Maisers. Toshma. So Gemara attempts another raya. Yisrael Aviv Kacham Shalokos Soda B'Shutfus. A Jew and a non-Jew own a field in partnership. So we view all of the produce in that field as Teva V'Chul M'Ravim Zebezeh. As if it's, Rashi explains, it's half Teva, it's half Chulin. Every kernel is half and half. Devei Rebbe. Rishim Gemalai Laimer. No. Shalav Kachavim, the produce that belongs to the guy is Potter. V'Shi Yisrael, and the produce that belongs to the Jew is chayiv. Says the Gemara, at kanloi pli, what is the basis of the Tanakhama of Shimon Gamliel's machloikis? El the mass of Yesh Breir, Shimon Gamliel says that when they go and they divide up the produce, the guy taking his portion, the Jew taking his portion, we say Yesh Breir, that it could be retroactively designated whose is what. Omar Sava, the Tanakhama holds, ain't Breir. Aval, but everybody agrees that were we to know for sure what is the guy's produce, Yesh Kinyan Lev Kachavim, of Etzov, gave my Meiser. That produce doesn't have a chiv taking off Meiser. Why? According to Mandomer, according to Belazar, there is an obligation. According to Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi, there is an obligation. And this is the Gemara. Again, this price is referring to a situation in Surya, because Sava Kibush Yochid, Loish Mei Kibush. And that's why it's not the regular situation. The Mefarshim say the Gemara could have said a different Eretz. The Gemara could have said a Teretz that we're referring to a situation that, like we spoke about in Amman Aleph, that it grew a third, the moment that it grew a third, it was under Gaisha control. And that's why it's different. The Gemara could have said that Teretz, but the Gemara didn't say that Teretz, because the Gemara wanted to say the same Teretz about Kibush Yochid, about Surya Kibush Yochid, that it said in Amman Aleph. It's a shame, as Shmuel points out, from here we see how important it is to have all of Klal Yisrael together. Surya, which was not captured, but all of Klal Yisrael together, never attained the level of Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael that was captured by all of Klal Yisrael together. Amar Rav Chiya bar Avin, so Gemara attempts one more raya. Tashma, Hamar Chasad Alev Kachavim, if somebody sells his field to a guy, Lekeach, Al Mishnah, the maybe Bikurim, Mnei Tikkun Oilam. So we see that the only obligation to bring Bikurim is only Mnei Tikkun Oilam, like we learned in the Mishnah, because we don't want fields sold to Goyim. Only because of Tikkun Oilam. Midaraisa, there is no obligation to give Bikurim. Why? Because a field owned by a Goy is Potter from Mitzvah Tluis Baritz. Says the Gemara, this is the way to understand the history. Omer of Ashi, Shteta Konasava. There were two stages. Mikura have a Maisa Midaraisa. At the beginning, a field that was sold to a Goy, they brought Trumas a Maisa Midaraisa. Because the halach is that Goyisha ownership doesn't exempt the Chiv Bikurim. But what happened was, Kim Dechazi, the Kamakwi Umezabni. So what happened was, people saw that even though the field was sold to a guy, they figured there's nothing wrong. What's the proof? You're still bringing the same Bikurim as we always brought. Kiv Dechazi, the Kamakwi Umezabni, people were selling the fields to Goyim. The Savri, because the Shasayim Kaimi. There's nothing wrong with selling it. What's the proof? You're still bringing Bikurim. To Kinalu, so that's when Chazal instituted the loylaisi, that we should not bring Bikurim to such a field. However, then they saw, Kim de Chaza, the Mandalay Saga, like, if somebody wanted to avoid bringing Bikurim, he had a legal loophole. What did he do? Masbin. He would sell his field, and like that he would avoid bringing Bikurim. And what was happening now was a Kumishtakim Biyad Avikachavim. People were selling their fields to Goyim. So other to Kinalu, the Laisu, just by selling your field to a guy, you will not avoid the obligation of bringing Bikurim. So our Mishnah is referring to real situations of what was going on in the market, and we can't use our Mishnah as a proof to this question. So now we begin a sugya that we mentioned earlier. Hamaycha sadeh lepeiros. I sell my field, but I don't sell the actual field. I sell the right of the fruit, of the produce of the field to a customer. Rav Yochanan Amar, Navy Vikari. The customer who bought the field has the obligation to bring Bikurim, and the halach is when you bring Bikurim, you have to say a whole parasha, the regular obligation. Shlokish Amar, Navy Vikari. You still bring Bikurim, but you don't say the parasha. And the Gemara explains what is the basis of Rav Yochanan Shlokish Machlokish. Rav Yochanan Amar, Navy Vikari, because he holds, Kinyan Peres Kinyan Guftami. If I only own the rights to the produce, it's like I own the field. So I'm a full-fledged owner. And if I'm a full-fledged owner, I have the obligation to bring Bikurim. Rish Lakish Amar Mevi Veinu Kairi, because he holds Eina Kinyan Peiris Lafka Kinyan Guf. If I only own the produce, that doesn't give me full-fledged ownership. Machloikis Rishonim, how do I understand Rish Lakish's opinion? Some explain Rish Lakish. Since Rish Lakish holds that Kinyan Peiris is Lafka Kinyan Guf, the entire obligation to bring Bikurim is only Midrabon. That's how some Rishonim explain Rish Lakish's opinion. Other explain, what Shlokish means to say that he's Mechuy Medaraisa. But there are different levels of Chiv Deraisa. When I own the actual field, so not only do I have an obligation Medaraisa to bring the Bikurim, I have an obligation to read the Parsha. When I don't own the actual field, I only own the Paris, I have a Chiv Deraisa to bring Bikurim. But that the Chiv is only up to bringing the Bikurim, but not saying the Parsha, because the Parsha speaks about my field. It's not really my field. Eiser, Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish, Eiser, Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish, the Pasuk says, in the Parsha of Bikurim, Ulebei Secha, Melamed, Sha'adam Mevi Bikuri Ishta Vikari. A person, as we discussed just recently, owns in his wife's property, Nuchsimalug. Nuchsimalug is that he gets the produce, and the actual property belongs to his wife. So we see that you have to bring, even if you only have a Kinyan Haguf, Kinyan Peiris, you still bring Bikurim. So Mefarshim asks, this entire concept of Nuchsimalug is only with Rabbanim. So how's the Torah speaking about Nuchsimalug? There's nothing in the Torah about Nuchsimalug. Answers Taisus, the Ramban says the same Teretz, that even though there was no takon about Nichsimalug Midaraisa, it was still always the minig, was always the custom that a wife brought property into the marriage, that the husband ate the Paris. And the Pasuk is telling us that how to deal with the Bikurim. So here we see that if you only have only Kinya Paris, you bring Bikurim. Amar Shani Hasam, the Ksivla Beisach. That's the Gzeres HaKosif, that even though you only have Kinyan HaPeiris, you should bring Bikurim. Vikad Amri, and others learn the Gemara just the opposite. Eishvei Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan, Ula Beisecho. So here we see Malam and Chodam, maybe Bikurim, Ishtev HaKairam. Hasam, only there, Hudik Ksivla Beisach, where the Torah goes out of its way to say that even though I only have a Kinyan HaPeiris, I should bring Bikurim. Ava, Ba'alma, every other situation where I only have Kinyan Paris, loy. Amalei. So Rabbi Yochanan says just the opposite. Tam didi nami mahocha kamina. How do I indeed know that if I only have a Kinyan Paris, I bring Bikurim? Because it is Pasuk. The Pasuk of Lebei Secha, the Pasuk of Lebei Secha, which teaches me that I bring Bikurim from the Nichsim Malug of my wife, serves as a source and serves as a model that wherever I only have a Kinyan Paris, I have to bring Bikurim. Eisvei, Shemar asks another question. It says in a Braisa, Hoyabar Baderech, if somebody's traveling to Yerushalayim, or Bikuri Ishta Biyoda, and he's carrying his wife's Bikurim, Vishama Shemes Ishta, and he hears the terrible news that his wife passed away. Mevi Vikuri. So how would you understand this Braisa? Only Mesin, because she dies, and as we've learned many times, when a wife dies, Midaraisa, her husband, is Hayyirish, so now he owns the field, because it became his field. However, Loi Mesa, had she not died, Loi, he wouldn't say the Pashas Bikurim, because he only has a Kinya Paris. Says the Merloi. That's not the way to learn that Braisa. The halach is, the Afagav the Loi Mesa. Even if the wife had not passed away, he would still have to bring the Bikurim, and say the Pasha. So why does the Braisa speak about Mesa? The Braisa is trying to teach us another din. The halacha is as follows. Let's say somebody cuts off his own fruit, but he doesn't have the ability to go to Yerushalayim, so he sends the fruit up to Yerushalayim with a shliach. And then as the shliach is taking this fruit, the Bikurim to Yerushalayim, Rachman al Tzlani passes away. So now the owner says, I have no choice. I'm going to have to bring it myself. The halacha is, mevi ve'inu kaira. He brings it, and he's the owner of the fruit, but he doesn't say the parashat of the Kurim. Shenemar v'lokachto v'avesa. Achitei l'kicha v'avo be'echad. The Torah teaches us a special din, that in order for me to say parashat of the Kurim, I had to be the same individual from the beginning to the end. I started the trip, and I brought it, and I say the parashat of the Kurim. But let's say the trip was begun by one person, by the shliach, who then unfortunately passed away. And then I say, okay, if he passed away, I'll take over. So it isn't the same individual from beginning to end. then you don't say the Parashas Bikurim. So we would think the same here, that if somebody first was carrying this Bikurim from his wife's field, and then on his way up to Yerushalayim, his wife passes away, and now he's carrying it up because it's his field, it should be a similar situation, that it's not the same person from beginning to end, because this husband changed hats, so to speak, along the way. At the beginning, he was doing it as a husband, and then he was doing it as an independent owner. Kamash Bon, since it's the same person, the husband from the beginning to the end, even though his financial status, his ownership status somewhat changed, that doesn't change that the halacha is that he still could say the Parashas Bikurim Kamash Malan.
That's the question. That's the question. For what degree?